Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 11 of the World Soccer Talk podcast, we reveal which legendary commentator has left at ESPN. Also, the fascinating results from a survey that paints a picture of how soccer fans in the US watch soccer. And also, the latest TV viewing numbers from the Premier League, Liga MX, and Bundesliga, and much, much more. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined here today by Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Chris.
Okay, so let's dive right into the first segment. Okay, so the first segment is what we've been watching. And Kartik, let me start off by kind of what I've been watching this past week. And feel free to jump in, too, if you saw any of this or have any perspective. The first match was last Friday, which was the Freiburg against Bayern Munich game on Fox Sports 1. It was the return of the Bundesliga after the winter break. And this one was interesting to watch for TV viewers. It was Kate Abdo's Bundesliga, basically debut on Fox Sports. And it was a weird dynamic because we had the previous host of the Bundesliga, Ian Joy, and he was put in the role of analyst alongside Eric Winalda, and then you had Kate hosting. It went well, no complaints, but it was strange kind of seeing Ian in that role. And at times, it sounded like he was kind of almost playing the role of a host, even though I don't think he was meaning to. But it's probably going to take a little bit of time to kind of get him kind of used to being in that analyst role, which, of course, he did at beIN Sports quite often. But it was just an interesting dynamic. And I guess now we know what's going to happen to Ian Joy. Maybe he'll be kind of brought in on some of the presenting responsibilities at Fox Sports. But more than likely, it looks like he's going to be now put in the role of an analyst. So we shall see how that changes over the coming days or weeks. Of course, this weekend, we've got the FA Cup coming up. We've got the Champions League coming up in a few weeks from now. But it'll be interesting to see if Ian Joyce gets pulled into some of those as an analyst, and then what happens to kind of the talent makeup on the Fox Sports studio set. But what do you think, Kartik, in terms of that dynamic? Do you think that could work?
It could work, but I think that there's just other questions with Fox as far as production and the way the intro and outro segments that is not necessarily controlled by the presenter that remain challenging for them to overcome to convince core soccer fans that they're doing a good job with the product. However, this is an interesting dynamic. Ian Joy has a lot to contribute as a studio analyst and as someone who knows the Bundesliga well, and when you get into FA Cup, knows British soccer as a whole very well. So that would be quite interesting. It also, I guess, frees up Ian Joy's schedule when MLS season rolls around, as he does do commentary for New York City FC as well, mm-hmm. and for their local broadcasts.
Well, one other thing to mention about this Freiburg against Bayern Munich game was that Fox Sports is starting to actually read questions on air from Twitter. And that was nice to see. So you had Kate, Eric, and Ian Joy answering questions on air, including one of our listeners, RBO, who's quite active on Twitter. So it was great to see some of those questions coming in and them answering them on the fly. That was a nice kind of interactive touch there. For me, Kartik, then that was Friday. Saturday was highlighted by a rare victory. This was a shock to me. I was completely flabbergasted. Liverpool 2, Swansea 3. And not much to add from a soccer viewing perspective in terms of soccer media, but what a match. And it really kind of restored my faith in the team and restored my faith actually in Paul Clement, who I thought didn't get that new manager bounce. Swansea played Hull City in the first match under his guidance. And they lost that one in the FA Cup, and then they lost the next game against Arsenal and looked absolutely horrible. So great victory, great game to watch, and bad news for Liverpool, but I definitely enjoyed watching that one. And then, Kartik, I've been watching a lot of the Africa Cup of Nations and basically kind of like one or two games a day. And as I said last week, too, I've been really enjoying watching the coverage. The matches have been more open and entertaining in the last few, more goals being scored as We kind of see which teams advance to the quarterfinal stages. And we had a question actually from one of our listeners on Twitter. It's one of our listeners named Chris Lodato. And he asks, who's the great announcer? And for those who have watched the Africa Cup of Nations on beIN Sports or haven't, there's a really good announcer on there, the one that's on there most of the time. And let me see if I can play an audio clip here of him to see if anyone recognizes his voice.
Watch out! Behind that defense! Watch out! All the bounce and the roll of the ball then seem to undo him in his movement at three-quarters pace. The last touch in off of the defender out for the corner. Under 30 seconds remaining. Michel Doucet's adventure at this year's tournament with Cote d'Ivoire looks all but over.
And there you go. So that was the one that the Morocco Ivory Coast game with Ivory Coast getting knocked out of the tournament, the reigning champion, which is a big upset. But if there's any listeners out there who know who that is, please let us know either through Twitter or through email. We'll give out the addresses later. But I've enjoyed the commentary, Kartik, just as much as I've enjoyed the games. And it's been a fun tournament. And this weekend, all the games are going to be on beIN Sports or beIN Sports Connect. On, I think, two on Saturday and two on Sunday. And for anyone who's interested, any of the listeners, I definitely would recommend tuning in. Been great atmosphere, great tournament, and now we get down to the final four, well, actually, the final four teams, I believe it is. Anyway, the final bunch of teams, and it's been really entertaining to watch. And then, Kartik, last but not least, yesterday I watched the Liverpool against Southampton game. The EFL Cup semi-final, second leg, and we had Gary Bailey and Kay Murray doing the pre-match. And the game itself was actually kind of one of those games where I couldn't believe that Southampton didn't score. They had about two or three just clear-cut chances, and I couldn't believe that Liverpool didn't score. They had about the same number of chances. Daniel Sturridge especially had some golden opportunities to score. So the match was going into kind of the last 10 minutes, still at 0-0, and then Liverpool was pushing. Southampton did really well in terms of parking the bus. I mean, they had basically 9 to 10 defenders in the box at all times, and Liverpool found it really difficult to break down. And but it was an exciting end to the match. I mean, Southampton on the counter scored a goal and also got another late one and wrapped it all up. But I enjoyed watching the match. Great commentary by Peter Drury. And Southampton, shocker, goes on now to the League Cup final, which is, I think, February 26, which will be on beIN Sports, and we'll play the winner of today's Manchester United versus Hull City. So I enjoy it. And I think we've talked about this in the past before, Kartik, but to me personally, I enjoy the League Cup more than the FA Cup, which I know for some listeners that's probably sacrilegious, but I just do. I think it's a really entertaining tournament, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think Liverpool is really struggling currently, and I had been concerned and took a lot of abuse on Twitter about a month ago for saying that if there was a team that was likely to fall out of the top four, it was them, because Manchester United was coming on strong at the time, and I also felt like at Spurs were out of the top four at the time, that I had picked Spurs to finish first or second in the league, depending on which projector I did before the season. I mean, I was very high on Tottenham, and I had felt like, okay, they're beginning to get their groove, and I've been correct about that. So now they've shot up to second, or they're now third in the table, but I think their trajectory will have them probably overtake Arsenal unless they fall off. But they're almost certain to finish in the top four the way they're playing Spurs. So someone was going to fall out of the top four, maybe two teams. And if two teams fell out, it was logically going to be Manchester City and Liverpool, in my opinion. And it's still looking like that's going to be the case. Even though Liverpool valiantly was sitting second for a long time, I think might have even been top of the table for a few weeks in October and early November. It seems like Jurgen Klopp doesn't quite have the depth, and with this side, and since Sadio Mane went to the Cup of African Nations, yeah. You look at how they've struggled. So some very alarming signs for Liverpool. There is time to correct it, but They have been eliminated from a cup competition. And the other thing to note about this match is, and we all love Jurgen Klopp, but Klopp is now developing a reputation of a manager that loses to big games. And that's not necessarily something you want. Then again, the clubs that he manages have a disproportionate number of big games compared to the managers that preceded him or succeeded him at Borussia Dortmund and at Mainz, and then now it was Tuchel in both places, and then now at Liverpool, far more big games, chances to win cup competitions than under Brendan Rodgers or Tenny Dalglish or even, I don't want to say under Rafa Benitez. Obviously, the first few years under Benitez, Liverpool was won an FA Cup and was going deep in Europe every single season. I think that's forgotten about often now with hindsight when we talk about the Benitez era at Liverpool, because we look at league finishes, right? Mm-hmm. Our focus has shifted towards the Premier League, and we see they were fourth, fifth. But every year, I want to say they made the Champions League semifinals each of Benitez's first 4 years. That might be inaccurate, but I think they did.
Yeah, full credit to Southampton, though, for this one, too, because I mean, in terms of the game plan and how they set up the team in both legs, really, but especially in the second leg, and defended very, in terms of the kind of the formation in the back, in terms of giving Liverpool very little space. And it was one of those matches that Southampton could have won this one probably 3-0 at the end of the day, if it wasn't for Liverpool's goalkeeper making a great save. But Liverpool, in that match against Swansea, I was actually really surprised by how Liverpool didn't press as hard as they usually did and kind of let Swansea play and let them play with the ball and get pretty good possession. But I think it looks... I mean, Sadio Mane is definitely, I mean, the biggest difference in terms of that. But also Sturridge. I think Sturridge, you mean, will do a few nice touches, but then we'll let the viewers down with kind of a shot on goal or just his last touch. So I think it's also a little bit of timing too, where you're not getting Sturridge at his best.
He had the assist to win the game at Goodison against Everton in the Merseyside Derby, and that was a great, nice setup after Monferrigi about 8 minutes earlier. But I'm finding Sturridge, because he's having limited opportunities compared to the past and he's always facing injuries, I'm finding him to becoming an increasingly selfish player. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think Jurgen Klopp needs to address. Shooting from distance, too many trying to dribble through traffic. And I would actually make the same commentary about Sergio Aguero on Manchester City, where I think he's becoming a more and more selfish player who really doesn't fit Pep Guardiola's pass, kind of pass and move setup. And then if you're going to dribble, you dribble when you're in space or one-on-one with the keeper the way Sterling does. Sterling seems to understand that better. Maybe Sterling should take diving lessons. Right? That's a big controversy this week. But, I think that's the situation with Sturridge. Anyway, what I watched this week, I actually watched the speaking of the Bundesliga, the Leverkusen-Hertha Berlin game. The lineup of games on Sunday morning wasn't very appetizing to me. Leicester, the rain got just absolutely shelled by Southampton. And it was good to see Southampton turn things around, because they've had a difficult last couple of weeks. Claude Puel, some injuries. Since Charlie Austin got hurt, they just haven't been the same team. And Southampton being Southampton, they're not buying a replacement. They're more likely to sell whoever the replacement would be. It'd be Shane Long in this case, right? Mm-hmm. So Puel's had to make do without his primary goal-scoring threat. But it seems like with the League Cup and with the Leicester game, they're stabilizing. Leverkusen-Hertha was an excellent game. Finally saw Chicharito contribute, even though he didn't score. But he had a nice... a bit of play on the third goal for Leverkusen in this game. Kept an eye on the Leipzig game against Eintracht Frankfurt. Was wondering, coming out of the winter break, considering how poorly Leipzig did in that final match at Bayern, what was being billed at the time as the biggest game in European club football this season, or at least for the second half of 2016, if there was going to be a massive hangover. They come in, they get fortunate with a sending off, in the first half, but they did the business and they looked very good. So watch that.
Hey Kartik, I missed that game. I didn't see that one. But was Kate Abdo in the studio on that one too?
Well, she was in the studio, but they were doing kind of a traditional Fox thing, Fox soccer thing, which was she was providing the John Hurts or Christian Miles intros and outros and kind of voiceovers, but there was no studio analysis.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But right. She was hosting. She was presenting. But that was how they handled Sunday. I watched obviously the Manchester City Spurs match on NBC, and we'll get into this in a minute. But the talking point from that game became officiating and became Raheem Sterling's unwillingness to dive, which became I think the topic of conversation for 3 days straight on the ESPN FC program. Mm-hmm. And Craig Berly and Steve Nichols saying that they really respect Sterling for trying to finish the playoff. That's your instinct. Nichols explained it. If you're a winger and you get in that position, strikers, sometimes their instinct is to die. If you're a winger like Sterling is and you get into space like that, your instinct is to try and, because you don't get that opportunity that often, one-on-one with the keeper, to try and stay on your feet, use your pace to get around the keeper. But, of course, it was a clear foul, right, at sending off by Walker. Burley agreed. Alejandro Moreno said you have to know the situation and just go down. You have to sell the referee. It's not even conning the referee because you have been fouled. You have been impeded. You're not going to get you're not going to get your pace back up to round Lloris and score in that situation. So even if you may not even get your touch back on the ball. So that was the discussion there. I think what is really interesting, though, then is that it's then led into a discussion about the Premier League versus other European leagues. It seems like, as Burley and Moreno were arguing, and Hislop on one of the other days, that the standard of officiating in the Premier League is so poor now that it is ruining the competition and ruining the enjoyment of the competition vis-a-vis other European leagues, where there are controversial officiating calls, particularly in Spain this year. There have been some bad calls in games in La Liga, but that it seems like every week we're discussing this in the Premier League, and every week it's in a big game. And Burnley-Arsenal, same thing, right? Burnley has both matches Burnley lost to Arsenal this season were decided on terrible calls, quite frankly, that went against Burnley.
Yeah.
There might be an alternate table out there. I think Chelsea wins the league regardless, but it might be an alternate table from 2 through 20 that's radically different than the real table. And I have always argued through the years, Chris, that officiating errors even themselves out over 38 matches. I began to hedge on that last season when West Ham United had a run of three straight matches when they were chasing the top four, where there were strange calls that went against them in each game. They drew each of those three matches, and I think they might get the fourth if it hadn't been for those calls. I know they finished seventh, but you have to think about the psychology after you have those bad breaks. Same thing with Spurs. People say, well, Spurs finished behind Arsenal last year, but they actually pushed the title higher, pushed Leicester much harder than Arsenal did. They just ended up third because after the psychology of that Chelsea defeat, they mailed it in. But this is a real problem for the Premier League, and we talk about it being the top TV league in the world. Mm-hmm. Do viewers begin to feel cheated out of an experience and shift to other leagues long term, or do they say this is part of the experience, this is part of the entertainment factor of the Premier League, all these bad calls and all the controversy, because it gives us something to talk about, for sure. We're talking about Sterling all week.
It's a
and Kyle Walker all week, who committed the foul.
It's a challenge because in many ways, actually, the Premier League's probably produced and televised better than most leagues or any leagues around the world. So you're more than likely to get more different camera angles. So if there is a mistake by the referee, it's probably better or more likely that you're going to actually be able to see it and pinpoint it in slow-mo and all the technology to actually to show that the referee was made a poor decision in the scheme of things. Other leagues, probably fewer cameras at matches, probably less TV replays. I mean, yeah, and yes, other referees in other leagues make mistakes too. But in some ways, I think it's like the Premier League gets blamed for basically having such great television coverage that they can pinpoint referees' mistakes more often or more clearly. It's a tricky one, though, Carter, because even in the Swansea Arsenal game from a couple of weeks ago, Ki Sung Young was in the box. He got tripped by an Arsenal defender, and decided, because there was contact, decided to fall into the box and dive.
Right.
He didn't get the penalty kick. He got a yellow card. So, but to me at least, so if he stayed on his feet, he probably wouldn't have got into a scoring opportunity. So it's kind of that split decision within the, kind of a split second decision for a player. Do I dive or do I stay on my feet? And it's difficult because it's not consistent from the refereeing point of view. So I would say like 9 times out of 10, Ki Sung Yong diving in the box would have got the penalty kick. In this particular instance, he didn't, and he got a yellow card, and Swansea suffered, and they went on to lose the match. The Sterling one was blatantly a foul, and kind of Kyle Walker in the post-match interview kind of said, "Yeah, well, I just had to do what I had to do to kind of throw him off his game," and it worked.
Well, I think at that point, you're in the 75th minute. You're down 2-1. If you're Kyle Walker, you take that chance. You take the sending off.
Yeah.
Manchester City, by the way, I don't know if this factored in his mind in split-second decision. Manchester City has a wretched record of missing penalties this season, so particularly when Aguero takes them. So, or De Bruyne, both have been missing penalties pretty regularly. So, although I think now Pep is having Yaya take them, so maybe he would have made it. But still, there's a you could be down to 10 men, but you're still 2-1. You take that chance at that point. He took the chance and got away with it, actually.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one for the referees because, I mean, if in kind of live action play, if we didn't have the advantage of having TV replays, that we would probably think oftentimes the referee made the right decision. It's only on the TV replays that we see kind of like all the different angles and go, yeah, the referee got it wrong. So in many ways, the league is setting up, or the Football Association is setting up the referees to fail because we have the technology. We, as the viewers, see these blatant fouls that the referees miss, but all they see is what they see with their own eyes, as well as their kind of assistant referees. It's a challenge, and it's one of those things that we saw, I think, this past week. I think the Bundesliga is planning on adding a video assistant referee, I believe, for next season. So technology is slowly but surely coming into the game, and I think it will improve things, but it's going to be kind of a slow and gradual kind of evolution to that. It's not going to be dramatic overnight where we can fix all the mistakes. But it is an interesting thing. And in that match too, the Man City against Spurs game, City was robbed. I mean, that should have been 3 points, and Guardiola was upset. For good reason, and that game could change the complexion of an entire season in terms of, you know, if City had won that match, maybe they could go on a run and maybe not win the title, but at least definitely kind of solidify top four and go on and do bigger and better things. But
yeah, that's certainly the case. Although I also have to laud Spurs' fight back. I mean, they played. Very poorly in the first half. They were completely outplayed, and they have a resilience and a resourcefulness this season that is not very Spursy, to use a term.
Right.
And you know, you have to look at this now in terms of football. There are very few clubs that have a manager who is creating an identity in a club and building a club around his own style and his own philosophy. Pochettino, along with Diego Simeone, may be the only two managers who've been afforded that opportunity at large clubs in Europe. And Simeone, I mean, I was explaining to even though Atleti's not having the best season this season, I was explaining to someone the other day about how tactically rigid Simeone's side is, and how it's one thing to concede possession, but it's another thing to have a plan that you drilled in when you don't have the ball, right? And I think the two teams in Europe that do that best are Atleti and Spurs in different ways, right? And Atleti has their own version of a press, although that often is they press in wide areas and fall back into the center of the pitch. But it's one of these things where, and I'd love to see some sort of analysis or documentary about this. This is an idea for NBC. The Premier League now has become a league with managers who kind of cycle in and cycle out, with the exception of Wenger. It would be interesting to see an analysis of the long-term ramifications of having managers like Mourinho
people come in and come out and don't have a particular playing style and are just very pragmatic to get results at the on a short-term basis. And those like Pochettino who implement a style that the club implements from their U15s or whatever on up. And perhaps Klopp is doing that at Liverpool. I'm not sure, but I just felt like I should say a word lauding Spurs because they're definitely – we like to make jokes about Spurs, and they're an easy punchline through the years. And I'm sure something will happen the rest of the season and we'll say, oh, that's so Spursy of them. But it's they are a big club now, and they are a big club because of their manager. And that's something to really celebrate.
And with Spurs too, I mean, looking ahead and looking at the new stadium that's coming along nicely, as well as their playing style. I mean, defensively right now, they've been hit with a couple of injuries, which is going to set them back. But they're a solid team. They're a team that I think opposition fears. But off the pitch, though, too, this is a club that's growing. And I think once that new stadium comes into place, they can build on that and really kind of progress and become a much more powerful team than they are today. But, yeah, definitely some exciting things to look forward to. So Kartik, anything else from this past week that you had a chance to watch that you wanted to point out to our listeners?
It's just that Sebastian Salazar, who moved from NBC to ESPN, got a couple day run of hosting ESPN FC, and he was very good, very well up on European football. That was a criticism of him when he was at NBC and he filled in for Rebecca Lowe, is that he didn't really know the Premier League. He's an MLS guy. But he did quite well and tried to mimic, in some ways, Dan Thomas's aggressive questioning style. Couldn't pull it off quite as well, but was not wouldn't just ask a question and let the analyst filibuster for 2 minutes. I mean, he was pushing buttons. And I like that because that fits style of the show. Mm-hmm. And Adrian Heald filled in one day, as he often does, and he does the same thing. When Alexis Nunez, when she fills in, she does the same thing. So they've got a real kind of chemistry and feel to that program that I quite like. And again, this has been a constant theme since we started this show, Chris, but it's so often that I end up waiting for ESPN FC to come on to get Premier League analysis, and this show was no different. Salazar was hosting, had a Nickel and Moreno on and to talk about the officiating calls and the burn, and he also that we're not always getting from NBC. So they complement each other nicely. It's not to knock NBC, but again, maybe NBC needs to enhance their coverage by mixing in another analyst. And it could be Hislop, it could be Burley. Those would be my two most likely candidates because they both played for so long in the Premier League. By the way, I watched I've always watched the Ian Dark, Steve McManaman coverage of the call of the Man City QPR game in 2012, right? Because that's what we got in the U.S. on ESPN2, yep. Or on ESPN, sorry. I believe that game was on regular ESPN, the famous Aguero goal. I've watched for the first time, I believe, maybe I saw it at the time, the Peter Drury, Craig Burley call. Burley was the match analyst that day. And it was fantastic. I wouldn't say it was any better or any worse than Macca and Dark, but it was nice to hear that call. And I'm a big fan of Peter Drury. So, and John Champion was calling the Manchester United match at Sunderland at the same time. Now, that was the feed we did get on American television because yep. It was Fox, and Fox never used their own announcers. But ESPN used their own announcers back in the day when those were the two rights carriers for the Premier League in this country. I know so many of our listeners started watching the Premier League when NBC started showing the leaks. I'm walking through this in more detail than I normally would. So the Champion call I had heard, and Champion stayed on the air while that happened, but the Champion call mixed with the Drury Burley call was fantastic. I had never had that before until a couple of days ago. It showed up somewhere on YouTube or someplace I was browsing.
For a lot of our listeners, too, we missed out, for those of us in the U.S., we missed out on the Martin Tyler call for that goal. And anyone who watches UK television or sees clips from UK television, here's the Martin Tyler call, which was sensational for that Aguero goal, which is you kind of hear almost weekly, I think, in a lot of the Sky Sports promos.
I had wondered where the Aguero came from,
yep.
Because Dark didn't do that, and Tyler didn't do it. I've seen the Tyler call. It's actually Drury's call, which I had never realized until this week.
Huh, interesting. Okay, Kartik, so let's move on to the next segment, which is our TV streaming news. And I'll have you kick it off in terms of what the latest news is from the world of soccer media.
Yeah, so Nielsen has partnered with AT&T for a set top box TV ratings data. And this will give us perhaps some more Nielsen households that watch soccer more in the demographic that watch the sport in this country. There have been complaints, particularly from MLS fans, more so than fans of the Premier League or other leagues in the United States, that the Nielsen ratings are not capturing the actual interest in the league. I actually don't buy that because it's very unscientific. But if you go to a major city and you walk around, even cities with MLS teams, and I'm not about Orlando or Portland or Kansas City, these very club-centric places. But if you go to Los Angeles or New York or Boston and you walk around, there's far more Liverpool shirts or Barcelona shirts or Bayern Munich shirts than there are, and I would add even like Juventus and AC Milan in New York, than there are shirts of the MLS teams there. And maybe I get confused with Man City shirts and New York City FC shirts, but I think it's this is an interesting thing. This will be we will see if the rating if there is a change in ratings, particularly for MLS after this is implemented.
And the other thing too about this is that with this data, if Nielsen decides to use it in kind of their ratings for games, they're also able to look at on demand. So not only so they'll be able to see exactly looking at this AT&T, I guess U-verse, it could be DirecTV too. Looking at this data, seeing exactly what people are watching, when they're watching it, and on what type of devices too. So they're looking at all of the data that they already pull. I mean, AT&T already has this data, but then sharing it that with Nielsen, and then hoping that whether it's MLS or anything, basically, it's more accurate TV ratings in terms of what people are actually watching. I'm with you on this one, Kartik. I think it's going to probably not give us too many surprises and not change that much. But still, it'll be maybe scientifically more accurate in terms of at least AT&T. Again, that doesn't include all the other TV providers, but AT&T does own DirecTV, DirecTV Now also, as well as U-verse. So it could be interesting. And then, Kartik, I heard a rumor this week from one of my sources that FuboTV will launch their new product next week. So we're looking at possibly Wednesday or Thursday, probably late next week. And this is the one that's going to include Fox Sports, the whole portfolio, which is FS1, FS2, Fox, the over-the-air network, Fox Deportes, and the big one, which is Fox Soccer Plus, which will give you a lot of games that you don't normally get unless you have it, unless you have Fox Soccer to go, as well as NBC. So NBC SN, NBC Over the Air, USA, CNBC, gives you kind of really kind of those from a soccer perspective, a really strong foundation, as well as beIN Sports and Univision and Unimas. Basically, you'd get the most comprehensive soccer streaming package available in the United States, and that's looking like it's going to launch next week. And Kartik, any other news?
Yeah, so Minnesota, I have to first note that Minnesota United let go of my friend Chris Lindholm, who's been doing their games for 20 years in USL and NASL, but they made some interesting replacement hires. They're a team that's moving from NASL to Major League Soccer this year, Minnesota United FC, and they will, by the way, we've had other teams get promoted like Orlando, Seattle, Portland in the past, but they are the first team that's actually been able to keep their crest and colors and logo and everything in their move up. So it's the same club. Well, it's all those clubs are the same clubs also, but it's really got the same feel with the exception of the television broadcast. And that's going to be neat because Kendra de St. Alvin, who's a women's player from the area, very, very well-decorated women's player, will become a color analyst or co-commentator, depending on your terminology, first one, the only one among MLS clubs of the 22 MLS clubs. So that's a pretty big breakthrough, and she's local, and people are very excited up there about it.
Yeah, definitely, and that's pretty historic news in terms of being the the only female TV color analyst among the league's 22 clubs in Major League Soccer. So that's a great great move. And then last but not least, from the TV streaming news, we kind of mentioned it earlier, or teased it earlier, ESPN has let go of Tommy Smith. So Tommy Smith with a Y, has been there for 24 years and made his farewell, basically kind of appearance on ESPN FC on Wednesday. And they did a 30-minute kind of highlights package of some of the best of Tommy Smith. Now, for newer listeners, many of them are newer fans of soccer in the U.S. Or abroad, you may not appreciate Tommy Smith as much as some of us older ones, older fans. But Tommy Smith, really, I think since 1993, has been a staple on ESPN through the press pass days, the SoccerNet press pass days, World Cups. But the highlight to me was really the UEFA Champions League coverage. At that time, ESPN2 had the coverage. Usually on a Tuesday, you'd get one game. And if you were lucky, one game on a Wednesday. And it was really the partnership between Derek Ray, the commentator, and then Tommy Smith, the co-commentator, where they really kind of brought soccer into a lot more homes in the United States outside of Fox Soccer Channel, which at that point was still kind of a channel that not everyone got. ESPN2 was a different story. And Tommy Smith had some really memorable broadcasts, as well as his famous catchphrase, putting the bulge in the old onion bag. And two games in particular that stood out for me that Tommy Smith co-commentated was the 2005 UEFA Champions League final between Liverpool and AC Milan. One of the best games I've ever seen in my lifetime, and I've seen thousands of games. And then the second game was Manchester United against Bayern Munich, the 1999 Champions League final. And again, another incredible game, just another fantastic ending to that one. And those are two of my highlights. I don't know about you, Kartik, if you had any highlights of yours with Tommy Smith.
Oh, so many. I mean, the old onion bag, I think, is the expression that always described him. I think that there were a number of highlights with him, both from press pass and from also from Champions League coverage, and even occasionally when ESPN had other games, U.S. soccer coverage, when he would be mixed in. He was rotated in for MLS for a year or two there, and then he also did some Premier League stuff, both at the initial time when ESPN had the Premier League rights before they went to Fox, we're talking 20 years ago, and then when they got the rights back in the sublicense from Fox in 2009. He also, I think, it was interesting to have him on after the France-Ireland controversy in 2009. That was, and then that was also a time when I think you saw a lot of posturing from French football people who felt embarrassed, like Frank Leboeuf, who's also on ESPN regularly, saying, well, this is a disgrace. Ireland should be in. And Tommy was much more objective about it. And of course, you had Roy Keane going out saying, well, Ireland, they shouldn't be in it. They blew their chances earlier. And then guys like Cantona, Cantona was more or less English now, you're blasting the FFF. But Tommy Smith had kind of nuanced position, which was, yeah, Ireland got robbed. This is unfortunate, but this is part of the game. And we can't have a 33-team World Cup. We can't have a draw with 33 teams. It's a 32-team tournament. His position was very mature and nuanced compared to what was going on outside. Even though he is, of course, Irish, and he had the reputation for using a lot of hyperbole. So I remember that, actually, if I'm going to pick one moment out, how mature and how nuanced and how really spot on his position was about everything. And it was just a reasonable position on that. Because that, for those of you who weren't fans at the time, that went on for weeks, right?
Yeah.
And I'll admit I was guilty. I was very gutted that Ireland hadn't qualified. And I carried on for weeks and weeks about it and about how France was illegitimate and proceeded to root against France very, very aggressively during the World Cup, feeling they shouldn't have been there. And but he had a very, very mature and smart position.
And that was the Thierry Henry handball that that should have been called but wasn't called. But yeah, I agree with you, Kartik. And that's the thing with Tommy Smith is I think a lot of listeners that are listening to this right now are probably thinking like, oh, thank God he's gone. I mean, there were a lot of people that didn't like him. I mean, so to me, he's almost like a Ray Hudson type of person. You either love Tommy Smith or you don't like him. And because he was very much in your face. But he was passionate, and he is passionate, and he is full of life, and you can tell he loves the game. And that's the thing, though, too, is that just because he's leaving ESPN doesn't mean that's the end of his career. He's going on to Philadelphia Union, and will continue with them on the TV broadcasts with the Union for those MLS games. And also is going to be continuing doing Sirius XMFC, doing the Grumpy Pundits show on the satellite radio there. So he's still going to be around, but I'm definitely going to miss seeing him on ESPN. But after 24 years, I mean, to me, he's a part of U.S. soccer history. I mean, if you look at soccer history on television and look at some of the key players, some of the people that really got people into the sport. I mean, he was on, he's been on, you know, oh gosh, what's the guy on PBS, Kartik? Do you remember the guy that's on late night TV? Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose.
Yes.
He was on the Charlie Rose show, I think a few times actually. He was interviewed during World Cups and was really kind of talking about soccer and what it was.
Charlie Rose has taken, I think, some sort of interest in soccer as part of a global political thing because he's basically a political guy because he's had Sir Alex on a few times.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think Tommy Smith probably on that level is influencing new fans or people within the business, or within the TV business, and kind of getting them to better understand what this sport's all about. And we've talked about kind of gateway kind of drugs in a way. I think Tommy Smith was a great gateway person to kind of get people excited about soccer and start watching it. And we saw on Twitter last night, we posted a story about on worldsoccertalk.com about Tommy Smith leaving ESPN. And there was a lot of reaction on Twitter. Some negative, but the vast majority positive in terms of kind of just thanking him for being such an influence on them in terms of helping them become a soccer fan or helping them get into the sport. And those ESPN broadcasts, ESPN 2 broadcasts from roughly the late 90s, early 2000s were transformative, and he was a large part of that. So Kartik, let's move on to the next segment, which is TV ratings, and I'll go through a couple, and I'll let you go through a couple too, and we'll get through these. The first one is last Saturday's match between Manchester City and Tottenham Hotspur on NBC Sports, NBC over-the-air network, posted 1.16 million viewers. That's now the fourth consecutive week that an EPL match has drawn more than 1 million viewers. And I think, Kartik, I think part of it is timing in terms of some big matches on for the past few weeks. But also the weather. I mean, kind of the winter weather, kind of people kind of probably staying indoors more often and watching some great television. And for the Premier League, I think it's a great great timing. And also, too, probably, Kartik, it's also kind of from the winter break or lack of a winter break, how much that actually helps the Premier League. And then, Kartik, moving on to... also, Liga MX, they had more than 1.7 million people tuned in to watch Club America against Tigres on Univision last weekend, which is a big number. And then following that match, they had 1.55 million people that watched Chivas lose to Club Tijuana. So again, the Saturday night kind of doubleheader there too with Chivas, Guadalajara, and Club America bringing in some big numbers for Univision and Univision Deportes.
Yeah, and I think MLS must be looking at the TV ratings for Zolos. One of those games you mentioned was Club Tijuana game, the game against Chivas, and thinking they can potentially put a team in San Diego, which is a small TV market, 28th largest TV market, and maybe some of those fans are in San Diego and they might watch an MLS team there. I am dubious about MLS or even NASL or USL going to San Diego, even though it looks like all three leagues are making a play at the market, because I think, and this goes back to people who aren't tracking television ratings and realize how popular Liga MX is in this country, there are a lot of English language speaking soccer fans, gringos, if you will, in San Diego who follow Zolos because they're right across the border and even hop the border now and then to go see a match. It's much easier if you're an American to cross the border. You're a Mexican. So They have a following, and I don't care what local team you put in San Diego in NASL or USL in a minor league or even in MLS, they're probably not going to be the same quality as Club Tijuana, which also has had a knack of attracting American U.S. national team players the last few years. So I'm always fascinated by the ratings that Club Tijuana gets, and I think that they've got a big following. We talked in the past about we've gotten questions about English language on American television for Liga MX. I think if you do that, that club might be the driver more than Chivas in America, which are the drivers on Spanish language television.
And it looks like MLS is probably going to go into San Diego in terms of at least the developments in the past week or so. But San Diego reminds me a little bit of Miami, Kartik, in terms of you've got a large population, there's no soccer team, a lot of them are English language soccer fans, but just putting a team, an MLS team in Miami is not going to guarantee you success.
I have to tell you, our former colleague here at World Soccer Talk, Richard Farley, is from San Diego and has lived in Miami and says Miami is probably the second worst market in the country to put an MLS team. He thinks San Diego is even worse. Absolutely. Has the same things as Miami, but less people and less kind of passion for the sport. Maybe not less passion for the sport. And then there's this factor that there is a high-level professional team right across the border, right? If you're in Miami, you have to fly to Cancun or fly to Mexico City or drive from Orlando if you believe MLS is at that level. Orlando's not very far, but still, San Diego has a team 20 miles away. They play right across the border. So Richard has told me he's not as high on San Diego as everyone else is. And I've always said that I think San Diego has just the it's the kind of market that unless you have the game at a really mature level in this country, you don't go into it. It's the same way I feel about the Miami-Fort Lauderdale market. I think MLS is better off looking at a return to the Tampa Bay market, Raleigh-Durham, Nashville, some of the places that they've, St. Louis for sure, that they've got on their list right now before tackling those and before tackling San Diego, before tackling Miami-Fort Lauderdale again, although it seems they're determined to do that, and tackling Detroit, which is, again, a large market where there are a lot of European soccer fans and the ambiance and experience of an NPSL team in Detroit City, which is supporter-run and owned, probably trumps the kind of plastic atmosphere of MLS. It's that kind of city. So I think in Detroit, people are either watching the Premier League on television or they're going to an NPSL game. I don't know that MLS is going to be appealing to that market. But we'll see.
And we mentioned earlier, we talked about the Bundesliga, the Friday night game, which is the Freiburg-Bayern Munich game, which actually I enjoyed watching that one, Kartik, for another reason too, is because it's a small, intimate ground. It looked like a kind of an older Premier League ground or a kind of a championship ground. The atmosphere was really good. The crowd was as normal in the Bundesliga, really loud and passionate, and banners and fans jumping up and down and standing room only type of thing. I enjoyed watching the game. Unfortunately, the TV viewing numbers didn't correlate. The TV viewing numbers for the Freiburg Bayern Munich game had 54,000 viewers. When we just talked about all these millions that the Premier League and Liga MX got, that's unfortunate. And it was Kate Abdo's Bundesliga debut, as we mentioned earlier. The issue, I think, and this is actually the worst Friday number for the Bundesliga on Fox since September, which was Cologne against Freiburg. And when it's Bayern Munich, you would think that the numbers would be much greater. My issue is that, and this goes way back, but my issue is still that Fox Sports doesn't promote their coverage. Within Fox Sports, if you watch FS1, FS2 during the week, which if you're a soccer fan, hardcore soccer fan, you're probably not watching FS1 or FS2 anyway during the week because there's no soccer games on. But there's the promos that you only see on those channels or on social media. You're not going to see ads elsewhere. You're not going to see any kind of interviews or anything else other than that. So it's sad news, unfortunately, for the Bundesliga in terms of just, I think to me at least, Fox Sports kind of letting them down in terms of promoting the league, which is an entertaining league to watch. I enjoy watching the games when they're on.
I wonder if you show more games at Freiburg or at Darmstadt. Darmstadt's the other club that has that, and they we'll see if they stay up this year. They stayed up last season. They got off to a good start last season and held on. If
that would drive more viewership because, as I've written at worldsoccertalk.com about MLS, Major League Soccer has finally figured out after 20 years, although they didn't have these really great atmospheres until Toronto came into the league in 2007, but figured out in 2017 that you want to highlight Seattle, Portland, Orlando, Kansas City more than you want to highlight Chicago, D.C., Dallas, and New England, even though the latter four markets I mentioned are all larger, much larger than the previous four, the former four I mentioned. But they're doing it based on atmosphere and ambiance. Dallas had the best team in the league last year. They're on national TV only twice, whereas Portland, who did not have the best team in the league last year, on national TV something like 15 times. So that's something maybe Fox wants to explore with Bundesliga. The better atmospheres are always Dortmund and Bayern just because they have so many fans, those two clubs. And I saw a study of fans in Germany where I think 30 or 35% of first division fans, something like that, support one of those two clubs, which is very interesting. I didn't realize that it was that big. And then, you know, Schalke has got a lot of fans, but the stadium atmosphere isn't quite the same. But then the smaller grounds, I think Freiburg is up there. I would put Darmstadt up there among, you know, Eintracht kind of has a nice following, particularly when they play away from home. And then I would put Hamburg and Leverkusen in that category. Maybe you want to avoid showing games that aren't at those venues, the venues I just listed.
Yeah, I still think it's just Fox's lack of promotion. I mean it's one of those things that to me at least, the Bundesliga games, I think I've never turned onto a Bundesliga game and kind of been disappointed by the atmosphere. To me, it always exceeds.
Yeah, it's true. They're all good. It's all relative. We're talking
right,
about
right. I mean, Freiburg was better than other stadiums, which is saying a lot. But that's the thing. If nobody knows that Bayern Munich is playing on a Friday, you mean who's going to tune in? And this is a close race. This is a close title race. I mean, it's.
I'll give you an example. There was a hockey game last night on NBC. I'm flipping channels. And they are already advertising during the hockey game for Arsenal-Chelsea in 2 weeks.
Wow.
A Premier League match. I think it's 2 weeks from now, or
yep.
Perhaps it's next.
Yeah, February 4th.
Yes. Yeah, right. And it's Arsenal-Chelsea just in the corner. Fox never does that. They never do that with any soccer property, leveraging all their other mainstream American sports. Now, I get that there's more crossover between hockey fans and soccer fans than there is between American football fans or NASCAR fans or whatever else Fox is showing these days, baseball, than there is soccer. But they don't even make the effort. I mean, I get that NHL and Premier League kind of go hand in hand. There's a higher percentage of NHL fans that follow the Premier League than percentage of NFL fans or college football fans, stuff Fox shows. But they don't even make the effort, is my point.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, I think a big difference with NBC Sports, too, is that, if I'm visiting, I don't know, the BBC website or whatever websites I go to on a normal daily basis, every once in a while I will see NBC ads there. Or even on YouTube, sometimes I'll see NBC ads for upcoming games. And that's something that Fox, I haven't seen that done in years. They used to do that, where they used to advertise on other sites. I think Fox kind of thinks, okay, within the Fox universe, everyone lives within that and watches, you mean NBA or NASCAR or UFC, and then if they're watching Fox, then they're going to know that there's FA Cup games this weekend. And for me personally, I don't watch UFC, I don't watch NASCAR. I haven't seen any Fox promos for any of the FA Cup games coming up this weekend. And I think if you ask the average Premier League fan, and I have to think about that too, if you ask an average Premier League fan, what FA Cup games are coming up this weekend? I mean, here we are Thursday, a couple of days away from it. Actually, a day away from it, the awareness level is probably way, way low, just because, yes, if your team, say, Swansea's out, but Manchester City's playing, you're probably going to look at the schedule and see, where they're playing. But that doesn't help the people that
But this is part of it. This is part of the League Cup. You kicked it off at the beginning of the show, the League Cup FA Cup argument. Now, this doesn't apply in the UK, doesn't apply in most of the world. But here in the United States, the level of promotion that BN Sport give the League Cup versus what Fox gives the FA Cup is, it's night and day. BN
I and it's because maybe Vian has no other English soccer properties, and they need to somehow get those fans engaged in their programs, the Express and the network. And they have a lot of talent like Kay Murray and Gary Bailey that understand English football. But boy, do they promote whether or not you like Vian or not, and certainly they're not in many homes, but. As compared to the Fox networks, but they promote the League Cup big time while they're showing other soccer properties, or even now college sports with Conference USA. They go all out on it in terms of just making people aware that they have the property, mm-hmm. and Fox doesn't with right. the FA Cup.
Yeah, and I had to remind myself, I had to look at the schedule for this weekend. I mean, there's some big games coming up. There's Liverpool against Wolves. There's Derby against Leicester, Chelsea against Brentford, Spurs against Wickham Wanderers. You got Southampton.
Yeah, I didn't even realize Chelsea was playing Brentford. Maybe that's my fault, but that's a local derby.
Those right, clubs are right, exactly.
Two or three miles apart.
Yeah, Southampton against Arsenal, so on and so forth. So there are some big games coming up. But again, if nobody knows about them, you actively have to seek out the information. Which for the hardcore fans is okay, but you're going to get lower numbers in terms of the viewing numbers. But maybe that's another topic for another day. Let's round up the TV ratings, Kartik, but I just want to mention that. So we had 103,000 people that watched the Leverkusen against Hertha Berlin match, the one that you mentioned from this past Sunday, and that's FS1 plus Fox Deportes combined, and that's a Chicharito number. You mean whenever Chicharito plays or his team plays, you're going to get big numbers, and even that number's not that great either. And last but not least, last week we spoke about the Man United-Liverpool match in the Premier League, and we were waiting on the NBC number, the over-the-air number. So the over-the-air number plus the NBCSN combined for that Sunday game, it was 1.32 million. And for the NBC broadcast, it was just the second half. So if that had been the full game plus the NBCSN, I mean, that would have been a monster number, but still 1.32 million, which is pretty decent. Moving on, Kartik, to our next segment, which is Listener Mailbag. We've got a couple of questions that came in or comments. The first is from somebody named Thomas Cope, one of our listeners, and he sent this in through email. And he says, I've been enjoying the Media Focus podcast. Thank you for broadcasting them. I think you guys are going to address this soon, but the well-moderated highlight show is so important to viewership and following a league. This is a weakness of Major League Soccer. Highlights are available online, but there's no weekly highlight show. I even have a team, the Colorado Rapids. I watch their games most weeks, either live in the stadium or via local broadcast, but I have little sense of what's going on league-wide. More than a weekly game, which may or may not be good, I need a highlight show. By the way, same for the Bundesliga, Serie A, or any league that wants to start getting into it. Once I know the narrative and characters, then I might start watching games. Kartik,
yeah,
your thoughts
on that? Completely agree. 100% agree. In fact, when I was at the NASL, we pushed this. I was actually going to pop in the DVR the Goal TV NASL magazine shows we had done that were hosted by Andres Cordero and Juan Arango a couple of years ago. And I think it was, George Metallis was on it, who's now at BN. Oh, Dre is obviously at BN also. It was our idea. Now, again, it was a lower division. It was a minor league. It didn't really catch on. But it was our idea. David Downs was our commissioner, former ABC sports executive, was you build the context of the league and the characters by showing a magazine program before you show live games. And I believe that the bumper programming that NBC shows around the Premier League, even though I've had my critiques about the bumper programming, but they're 4 years into showing the league now. Year one, it was just fantastic. It was a revelation. Has really increased the viewership and interest in that league. MLS has not had those programs since I remember MLS Extra Time in the early days on ESPN2, when ESPN2 was kind of still this network, showed all this other stuff, extraneous like NASCAR Tonight and NFL Tonight and all this stuff. They had that show with Rob Stone that lasted like half a season or a season. And then they had a show that Sean Wheelock hosted on Fox Soccer Channel that lasted like a year. That was Sean Wheelock and Harksey, right? And John mm-hmm. Harks
yep.
lasted like a year. And then they pulled the plug on that. And that was a soccer channel.
So there just isn't – I don't know what the commitment is to this from MLS. Now they're pushing people towards digital. Russ Thaler does a pretty decent show, former NBC hockey and MLS announcer. Russ Thaler does a pretty good roundup show on MLSsoccer.com and does these video features a couple times a week, which are really kind of deep drills into the league. But I don't think anyone's watching that, or a lot of people aren't even aware it's out there. So
right.
They need to have some sort of highlight show on ESPN or Fox. And here's the other thing that I would point out. ESPN FC does show a lot of MLS highlights, particularly on Sunday nights. They'll make sure that Alejandro Moreno is in the studio. They started out showing far more when they started that show 4 years ago, far more MLS highlights than they do now. I think they've realized that the driver of interest, even in that show with its small ratings, are European topics, mostly Premier League, but they talk about La Liga a lot, and they talk about the Bundesliga a lot, and they always have Gab Marcotti on to talk about Italy. So maybe there just isn't the market for this. I don't know. I seem to think it's important for the league in building context in the general sense, but ESPN has tried it, Fox has tried it, and they both abandoned it. And I don't know. Maybe it's different now because you have so many new teams. You have teams that are coming up from the lower divisions that had a following, Minnesota, Orlando, et cetera, that might maybe drive some kind of general interest in the rest of the league. I do have to say, from my informal survey of Orlando fans, though, that they have no interest in the rest of MLS. They tend to look down on the league. Mm-hmm. Think, you know, we're this great market. We're this great team. We have all this interest. MLS is over. Let's go watch the Liverpool-Everton game, right?
That's
their attitude in Orlando. I don't know if it's that way in Seattle or Minnesota. I tend to think it's kind of that way in Portland. I'm not 100% sure, but I think there's just also, like, even where MLS is popular, a snobbishness about the rest of the league, where they're just not interested in watching other games from the league.
Two things about that, too. I mean, one is that MLS needs it, definitely. I think it's, even if the ratings aren't that good, I think it almost needs to be Major League Soccer or IMG or somebody's producing this and making it available to Fox and ESPN and Univision. But the second point is more importantly, is that also international expansion. So for 2016, MLS definitely made their best impact on globally in terms of having Major League Soccer played on more channels worldwide than ever before. They haven't released the actual viewing numbers, but from a global perspective, it's important to kind of, you mean, this is good matches to be shown. Like in UK, for example, on Saturday nights when there's no other soccer on, Sky Sports shows MLS games, which is why last season a lot of the NYCFC games were shown kind of like at 2 o'clock US time, Eastern time. It was like, 7 o'clock UK time, so prime time in the UK. But that's the thing that's still missing, is that whether it's Major League Soccer or IMG, somebody needs to produce kind of a well-produced highlight package and then make that available to the US to cultivate and grow the audience, but internationally too, where internationally they want to learn about these players and learn about the teams. And we've seen this, Kartik, before, and we've mentioned this on air before, is that the Premier League, one of the secrets to the success of the Premier League in the United States, yes, there were many factors, but the Premier League preview show and the Premier League review show on Fox was dynamite. It was one of those things you could watch, even if you had an hour to spare, you would watch that and catch up on all the matches, and that's something that's missing on the English language side on MLS. One more thing, Kartik. So the question was about from Thomas was also talking about the Bundesliga and Serie A. Bundesliga does actually have a highlights package that's a review show that's on Fox. The challenge with that on Fox Sports, the challenge is that
finding it
because it's different times. They use it as filler, kind of when there's no programming on. I've watched it; it's really good.
There are really good Bundesliga magazine programs on Fox that they just kind of show randomly, too,
right.
That if I stumble upon them, like, this is good stuff. This is better. This is maybe even better context-building stuff than the Premier League puts out. Premier League has Premier League World, which they go kind of
behind the scenes and do some things outside the box. But as far as like telling stories about the league currently, I really like the Bundesliga magazine programs better than the Premier League, the ones Premier League Productions puts out. But you can never find them. And Fox does show them. They just show them at like random times. Sometimes it's on FS2. Sometimes it's on FS+. Sometimes it's on Fox 1, Fox Sports 1. Sometimes it's 2 a.m. Sometimes it's in the middle of the afternoon, 4 p.m., a time that you can DVR it. So I don't know. They're not consistent in that. And
and that's my chief complaint with Fox Sports as far as the Bundesliga is that they're just using it as filler, or it seems that they're using it as filler. So whether it's, I mean, if FS1 is filled with NASCAR, then they'll put the Bundesliga on FS2. And they'll put in kind of the highlights package show whenever there's space. It's not, there's basically dead air. So rather than show dead air, let's put the Bundesliga package. They don't seem to be really embraced with the Bundesliga unless it's a over the air game. You mean kind of Dortmund against Bayern Munich or something like that, or Christian Pulisic. Other than that, they seem to check out. But let's move on, Kartik. Next question is from Sunny SoCal Rob25 on Twitter. He says, last year you posted an article on the top U.S. TV markets that watched the Premier League on worldsoccertalk.com. I think most were on the East Coast for obvious reasons. Do you happen to know which are the top U.S. markets that get the highest ratings for Liga MX? It would have to be everywhere since games get primetime slots. And Rob, I went ahead and asked Univision to see if they could provide this information, and they're looking into it. So fingers crossed, hopefully we'll get those numbers and to see which are the biggest cities in the U.S. that watch Liga MX. And if we do get that data, I'll be sure to post that on worldsoccertalk.com. And then Kartik, if anyone has any questions, they can contact us through questions or comments or feedback, and we'll read them out on air. Email is web@worldsoccertalk.com. Twitter is WSoccerTalk. And then Facebook is facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. Kartik, let's move on to our featured topic of the week, and that is talking about a new study that was released this week. It's a discussion about a topic called We Know the Digital Soccer Fan. And it's from a company called Gilt Edge Soccer Marketing that's based in the U.S., and they put together this report. They interviewed thousands American soccer consumers in this past October. And what are some of the key findings and observations that you found in this report?
Well, there was a lot here, right? And Gilt Edge Marketing has done some interesting things in the past, including these market rankings, which, by the way, San Diego, since we talked about San Diego earlier, San Diego fans are citing as a reason that they're a top 10 market, even though it's a much smaller media market than a lot of the other places competing for MLS teams currently, including Sacramento, which has an established USL team that's looking to move up. Bigger TV markets. But this is interesting. Soccer fans watch 72% of their live games on TV compared to 48% on the computer and 33% on mobile. Now, I'm sure that number is shifting, but it's maybe not shifting as quickly as some of us thought it was. That I found very interesting. 48% watch the majority of the match live on TV. I honestly thought this number was much lower, was going to be much lower. I anticipate it'll continue to fall in coming years, but that means half the consumers are still in this age of technology and all these other options, iPhones and Androids and DVRs and all these other services. They're still sitting at the published time. Remember, we used to get the TV guide and we would look and say, oh, okay, they're showing this game at this time on this channel. And they're sitting down and watching the game at that time. Almost half the viewers. That, mm-hmm. That really surprised me. 1.5 million soccer subscribers to Reddit, subscribers to soccer Reddit, subreddits.
Hey, Kartik. And just going back just to watching television on soccer, watching soccer on television. I mean, for me, it's the appointment setting time. So when I look at the calendar, I mean, the schedule for the weekend, and for me personally, being a Swansea City fan, if I see Swansea City's playing, you know, Liverpool, I will say, okay, 7:30, well, actually 7 o'clock, I'll probably tune in. And I'll sit down and I'll watch this and I'll get my cup of tea and I'll to me, that's my time. That's my alone time to kind of watch this match. And for the most part, this season, kind of be depressed and be kind of like just painful watching this, but for once in my lifetime this season, thankfully, they won. But I think that's the same thing for a lot of viewers too, is that I mean, we all work hard during the week, and whether it's at school or at work or with our families. And it is a special time to kind of sit down. So in some ways, I'm not surprised in that, you know, I mean, there's such a large percentage of people that will tune in to those live games on TV. And I think for me, at least, and I'm not sure if this is like it kind of correlates with the numbers too, if I'm watching a game on a computer or watching it on mobile, if I'm watching it on a computer, it's probably a game that's not as important to me, but I will watch it. But I might be multitasking. I might be working on something else at the same time and have the game on in the background, or be on Twitter at the same time or something like that. So depending what the game is, I will be in a different state of mind. But again, the data is really interesting, and I think it's really it's a good signal for television in terms of NBC or Univision or whoever it is that people will sit down and watch games on TV. On that HD experience, on a big screen, flat screen, whatever it may be. But it's a good sign, I think, for soccer in the U.S.
Yeah, so that I find interesting. I found this discussion of 1.5 million subscribers to Reddit fascinating, because Reddit has become the hub of kind of soccer discussion. It seems like in-depth soccer discussion, usurping all of the previous sort of fan sites and message boards and big soccer and all of these things that we used to use to drive kind of long-form discussions and start rumors, quite frankly. The other thing I found interesting was that there was a number, and I'm sorry I didn't pull it up, that showed that more people were interacting on Facebook than on Twitter or other social media platforms during games. That, I think, might be true. I'm not on Facebook very much. I have to admit that. I'm more of a Twitter guy. But during the week, in between games, Twitter is a much bigger driver of discussion in soccer than Facebook is. At least among people who are in the game and in and around the game, not casual fans.
So Facebook. So basically, you said that kind of Generation Y, which is millennials. So that Facebook was the number one.
For them. That's right. It was a generational thing. That's right. Because I think among millennials and people who are Generation X, Twitter is really the driver. I mean, I've even been told now that. Generation Y is shifting towards Instagram. It's a social media platform rather than Facebook. And I was stunned. I don't know what you do with Instagram other than post pictures, but I guess that's that generation. Now, clearly, Twitter is the favorite of the current president of the United States. I might drive a renaissance in Twitter. I think that there are a lot of people who are on Twitter 24/7 just to see what Donald Trump says. So that's
I think it's different things though for different people though. So some people kind of like the social aspect of Facebook and being able to talk about soccer there. I mean, you probably know people, Kartik, and I do, that live on Facebook. They're on Facebook the whole time. If not on desktop, they've definitely got it on their mobile phone. You got some that are on YouTube. So my kids, my teens are on YouTube all the time watching content that through there. So that was something that's interesting. And then, of course, you've got Twitter, but it has a whole a different dynamic in terms of in terms of soccer fans there. Reddit is something completely different again, too. So I think it's almost communities. You have different communities of different people. Yes, there's some overlap, but I think each person kind of finds the community that's kind of a better fit for them and will kind of keep on going back to those sites, different types of sites. But Reddit's definitely making an impact. And a lot of it, too, is not just U.S. A lot of it is international. On some of the subreddits, you'll see that there's definitely a heavy overseas influence, too. A lot of it's from the U.K., especially on the soccer side. And then, Kartik, also some of the other interesting observations from the report is... And this one upsets me. But anyway, basically, soccer fans... It basically talks about pirate streams And it upsets me because it's one of those things that there's a lot of people still that are watching illegal streams of soccer games. And their excuse is that they can't, that their local cable channel doesn't have the channel that they want to watch to watch those games. My answer is, okay, at this point in time, almost every single game in every single league that you can imagine, almost, is available through streaming, legal streaming, whether it's Sling TV, PlayStation View, DirecTV Now, YIP TV, Fubo TV. I mean, there's so many different providers that if you really want to watch soccer in cost effectively, you can watch, I mean, for like 10 bucks a month or less, you can watch tons of soccer. So it's a generational thing, though, too, Kartik, because it said that 62% of pirate streamers are from Generation Y, which would be millennials. And it also mentions that soccer fans seek out illegal streams because they don't have access to those games on their cable system, which is true, but there are other alternatives. I think part of it, to me at least, is it's a culture thing where millennials especially, and other age groups too, but are used to going to illegal streams and kind of think that as the norm, even though there's issues with, I mean, malware, pop-up ads. I mean, there's a lot of privacy issues and kind of security concerns from people using those illegal streams where it could endanger your computer or yourself. But it is a millennial thing, definitely more than most. And also, I think an interesting thing that came out of this report is that soccer fans who do watch illegal streams, they're 46% more likely to be hardcore fans compared to non-pirate streamers. And also that these pirate streamers support 33% more teams than non-pirate streamers. So to me, it says that, okay, the more soccer you watch or have access to, the more likely you'll be able to actually watch more games, support more teams, and enjoy the sport more. And I have no problem with that side of things, but I would just wish that people would use legal streams, because by using illegal streams, you're putting money into the pockets of pirates, and that money's not flowing back into the game. So people overseas right. are getting rich off this. And meanwhile, the TV companies are spending billions to get the TV rights and streaming rights, are losing out on that. So that's hurting them. And then eventually, especially if it's a generational thing, as the millennials get older, this could really hurt soccer in terms of coverage, because if companies are not making money from it, they're less likely to be able to actually show a lot of these games to us. But
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think another massive takeaway from this study was that 63% of soccer fans play soccer video games every week. There's a 64% increase in likelihood of UEFA Champions League fandom for gamers, people who play video games, over non-gamers. And I think it's incredible the impact FIFA in particular, FIFA, which I don't play, by the way, has had on just people I talk to, Generation Y's, Generation Xers, and millennials, in driving their interest in the sport and pushing them towards certain European clubs and interest in certain players. It's pretty amazing. Now, I do play video games constantly. I'm playing Football Manager. I was just playing Football Manager before we recorded this podcast this morning. I mean, I play Football Manager every day, basically, and have for 15 years. I have to say, people always ask me, how do you know so much about this sport? I have to say, so much of my knowledge derives from that game, from the database that Sports Interactive has put together. And I'm guessing I'm not alone among people who cover soccer or work in soccer in this country that have learned so much about players from playing Football Manager, because it's so detailed and so well done. Gaming is part of the sport and is, I think, to be perfectly honest with you, and maybe I should play FIFA. I mean, I'm just not a gamer. I don't like to play games with hand-eye coordination. I like to play strategy games. And I'll admit, I don't play any other video games, nothing. None of the solitaire stuff that you see people play on their iPads or iPhones. I've tried playing Bridge Constructor a few times in SimCity, maybe every once a year. But I play Football Manager constantly. I seem to think it's something that you need to do if you're in the sport.
strangely enough. That may seem like an odd opinion and a very unfashionable opinion, but I really have come to that conclusion. I feel if I don't play Football Manager for a couple months, and there are periods where I don't play it for a couple months because I've got other things going on, that my my understanding of the sport as a whole and potential attributes of players, my sharpness, if you will, on that, it disappears. Wow. That might be a crazy thought, but really, I mean, I think it's as valuable as reading content constantly on the internet.
Yeah. That's
great. If not more valuable.
That's a great endorsement for Football Manager, Kartik. Sports Interactive will be...
Well, it could be for FIFA. It could be for FIFA also. I just don't play FIFA.
No, I understand.
FIFA has got levels of detail that it didn't have when I used to play it 10 years ago. But it could be for both.
And I think it's like different strokes for different folks. There's different types of games, strategy games, video games, and other types of games, too, that people get into. I don't think they need to, but I definitely think that they can appreciate... I don't know. I think it's a nice detour. I mean, whether it's midweek or taking a break from watching soccer to actually play it, whether it's Subudio, which I've been getting into the last few months, actually playing in a local league, or playing Football Manager or FIFA, whatever it may be, it's a nice escape, and it is actually a lot of fun. I do enjoy it. Just let listeners know too, Kartik. So if they do want to read this report, then there's a lot more detail in this. It's a free report. It is available if you go to guiltedgesoccer.com, and then you'll find a link to it. You just have to put in, I think, your name and email address, and then they'll email you the actual report. But highly recommended, and actually I think it's enlightening in terms of some of the observations that are made. Some of the things, yes, I think all of us within the soccer universe kind of know, but sometimes it's good to get an outside opinion in terms of is this really what's happening. But again, I do recommend that listeners pick that up and take a look at it, because there's a lot of juicy details in there. Kartik, before we go, I wanted to ask you, where can listeners find you on the internet?
KKFLA737 at Twitter is the easiest way, and probably on some Reddit, some subreddit related to the sport.
Okay, and Facebook now and again. All right.
Yeah, every now and again.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, and be sure to send us your feedback or questions so we can read them out on air. This weekend, we've got some FA Cup matches. We've got Africa Cup of Nations. I think there's 2 games on Saturday, 2 games on Sunday. So there's 8 teams left, not 4. And I think there's going to be a ton of football, I'm sure. There's Coupe de la France is coming up soon with PSG against Monaco. Yeah, there's so much stuff going on. So check out worldsoccertalk.com. We've got all the schedules for all the games coming up, and that way you don't miss out. And Kartik, over to you, sir.
Enjoy your football.